Hi, I'm John Rawling, welcoming you to Ringside Rewind, where I'm joined by Tris Dixon and Ian Dark. And we're grateful for sponsorship from Fleet UK, a car and commercial vehicle leasing company based in Hampshire, supporting our programme. Great people who've supplied customers for 20 years or more, including me. Wherever you are, they'll find and supply any car you want and work out financing options to best suit your needs. Fleet UK pride themselves on transparency, trust and fairness in every deal. And you can take it from me, they are brilliant at what they do. Just have a look and check them out at fleetuk.com.
Hello and welcome back to Ringside Rewind with me, Tris Dixon, Ian Dark and John Rawling. Last week was the first time we've taken a proper deep dive into one specific contemporary fight, and we looked ahead to Anthony Joshua, Francis Ngannou. I think a lot of us thought Anthony Joshua might win by stoppage, and that's exactly what happened. Ian, did anything that happened on Friday night surprise you?
Yes. I thought it was a stunning performance by AJ. I think he put several coats of paint on his reputation with the way that he did that in such authoritative fashion. What the value of the form will turn out to be, judge, say, 5 years down the line, we may know more then about how good Ngannou really was. But you could not argue with that performance. I didn't think he would do that quickly. I thought he might even box a little bit safety first, bearing in mind the fact that Ngannou had fury on the floor. But he didn't do that at all. I think there were a couple of novice mistakes, if I'm honest with you, by Ngannou. He left gaps for AJ to exploit, but my goodness me, how he exploited them.
John, how about you? Were you similarly impressed?
Well, you've got to be, haven't you? He just did a number on him, you know. Ngannou switched to southpaw and he unloaded that huge right hand, which was, I think it was one of the most chilling one-punch knockouts that I've ever seen in a heavyweight contest. You know, I think there's a very good argument that the referee should have stopped it before the end came, but that's nothing to do with Anthony Joshua. He did what he had to do. He looked terrifically focused. He looked absolutely ready for it, and he did a number, didn't he?
I mean, Ian, there's always, and we've spoken about this before, there's always a lot of pressure on Joshua. Do you feel like he had extra pressure on him to represent the sport and to do what he did?
I think he's always got pressure on him because he's so high profile, because he's almost an A-list celebrity in UK terms anyway. So there's always that surrounding him. But I do sense, listening to his answers in interviews now, that he's found a way to maybe switch off from all that. I think he's better with the new trainer. I think he's worked a few things out. Maybe he got sidetracked earlier on in his career. Maybe he started to believe the hype and the publicity. Maybe he took his eye off the ball a bit. But I think he's got his head around it again now. And I think mentally, you know, he's in quite a good place now in his career. What he doesn't want to do is fight Usyk if Usyk is the winner of the fight against Fury, because we've seen that twice.
Well, I suppose, John, Eddie Hearn was saying, I know it's Eddie's job to promote, Eddie was saying, you know, this version of Joshua against Usyk, who he pushed him close in the second fight, this version of Joshua would do far better against Usyk. What's your take? Because it's very easy to go blasé into the Anthony Joshua business now, off the back of wins over Otto Wallin and Francis Ngannou, who, with all due respect, people thought might give Joshua some problems. They aren't Usyk and Fury and you know, top five heavyweights by any stretch.
I think people who've suddenly said that's a performance which makes him the best heavyweight in the world, I think that's a long way from the truth. What he did was produce a very good performance on the night to deal with Francis Ngannou. It didn't suddenly make him a better fighter than Usyk or a better fighter than Fury. That still is there to be proved. It showed as well, I think, and Ian touched on it, the fact that he's now got a trainer with whom he's got a really good relationship. And I think Ben Davison is a very clever lad. and he's very good at the psychological side of the sport. And I do think that it looked very much, and in the interviews beforehand and the way in which he spoke afterwards, as though mentally he's got him on the right track. And he's more comfortable in his skin, isn't he? You know, after the defeat against Usyk, it was what he was saying afterwards in the ring. Okay, he might be under pressure, but it was embarrassing, wasn't it? You know, and what he was showing and saying on Friday night is what we want to see him producing. It doesn't mean suddenly he's the favourite to come out top of the pile. I don't believe that for a moment, but it shows that he's mentally very much more ready for the big tests ahead.
I mean, Eddie Hearn, it was, who got in the ring and started shouting from the rooftops about exactly how good AJ was and how he was the best in the world and he was going to have a reign of terror, whatever it was, over the heavyweight division. Well, he can't be the best heavyweight in the world because he's lost twice to Usyk, hasn't he? So until he reverses that bit of form, that's a complete non-argument. Now, is he the most marketable heavyweight in the world? Yes, he probably is. He is a ticket seller. He's a pay-per-view box office seller. And that, of course, means a huge amount of money these days.
Well, I suppose, Ian, let me kick this one straight back to you as well. With John saying, oh, it doesn't mean he's a better fighter than Fury and all the rest of it. But let me play the role of devil's advocate here. You know, look what Ngannou did to Fury and the nightmares he had with him and the fits he caused Fury. And the same guy who some said was going to be better this time around because he's got 10 rounds under his belt. He's having his second training camp. Some people thought Ngannou was going to be better and an improved version of what we saw. He was obliterated. So the form guide says that, that Joshua is the man in form.
Yeah, but it doesn't work out like that, Tris. You've been around the business long enough to know that styles make fights, and fights happen at a certain time in a player's fighter's career. And looking at Fury, I suppose the question hanging in the air is, was that a particularly demotivated Fury who hadn't got himself physically and mentally right for that fight, thought it was all going to be a bit of a cakewalk, which it turned out not to be? I mean, what we'll find out when Fury fights Usyk, and you presume then he's got himself in tip-top shape, is how much has he got left, which, of course, makes it fascinating. All the time we've got questions around a fight and a bit of jeopardy, we've got some interest.
Yeah,
John, go on.
Well, Deontay Wilder has looked a very much reduced fighter, hasn't he, in his two contests since he's come back from the epic trilogy with Tyson Fury. But what we don't really know, which we've alluded to in the past, is how much those Wilder fights have taken out of Fury, because it might be that he was under-motivated. And he said in his usual sort of graphic terms that he had a pretty lousy night against Ngannou, which is pretty self-evident, isn't it? But it might be that that's just part of a decline that he's suffered since fighting Wilder. And we'll only know that when he gets up there into the ring and takes on Usyk.
I don't think Fury looks so sure of himself right now. And I know that I'm talking it, this is amateur body language stuff, but, I think he was probably probably disappointed with what happened, in the sense that went with the commonality of the same opponent. It doesn't make Fury look good. And I think, I'm not sure that Fury's not started to ask some questions of himself now, not whether he was that good, but what he has got left in the tank, having been pushed so hard by Ngannou, or if he is just going to, because he's led us to believe subsequently that he was training hard for Ngannou and he was doing this and he was doing that and he'd left no stone unturned, probably his exact words, I think. And if that was the case, then he must be thinking, well, geez, this guy's just gone out and absolutely mullered him. Where do I stand in all this now? And, I don't think the Usyk fight is one that he's particularly chased, is it? In terms of Usyk accepting 30% and then them still not being able to get it over the line. I don't know. I just think Fury looks like a very uncomfortable champion right now.
Yeah, I think he's in quite a bad place. I think you're right, Tris. Reputationally, I think perception is a lot, isn't it? And the perception was that he seemed to be dodging the Usyk fight, as you said. He was offered the most fantastic terms, really, and still didn't want it. He came out with a lot of stuff on social media justifying his position. But I think most boxing fans thought, you're running a little bit from this fight. Well, now he's got this fight. And I think that's really the million-dollar question going into it is, how much does he have left? Because, you know, fighters do get to a time, don't they, in their career, that these guys are well into their 30s now, where they maybe do start to think about it a little bit. They haven't got that recklessness of youth anymore. They're not completely full of the business. They've made zillions and zillions. Can they still dig deep? And is the fire still burning? And other cliches.
Well, I think that's right. And John, in terms of that, you touched upon it earlier, with these guys getting on and you know, gaps between them, you know, their fights and appearances. And I know this is one we've probably touched upon in previous issues, but these guys should have all fought each other a couple of times by now, and we should know who the best of this era is already, or have a good inclination. And now we're going to get some possibly skewed results, because they're going to be fighting, you know, in terms of what's left of these great champions by the time it all comes around.
It's the Mayweather-Pacquiao syndrome, isn't it? That should have
happened. Well, Khan Brook as well. You know, we've had countless ones, and they give a slightly false read, don't they? Because you can't say that the fighters who ended up having these fights, that those fights would have gone the same way in their prime, surely.
Yeah, well, Lennox Lewis, Mike Tyson, there's another one for you, where they didn't get together when it really mattered. Tyson was pretty much all washed up by the time that happened. So, you know, you can still sell those fights like you could sell the Khan Brook one, but it was too late, really. So the great thing about the great fights in history, I mean, if you think of the first Tommy Hearns, Sugar Ray Leonard fight in 1981, that was two welterweights at their absolute peak, still young, still full of it. Brilliant fighters, wonderful. Same really with, you know, Hagler and Hearns. But that was Vegas going back, 30, 40 years now. So I'd like to think that the one good thing about the Saudi money is that we will get to see these fights now on a regular basis. But my goodness me, what a soulless atmosphere it was again.
Well, that's another story, isn't it? And the fact that it's taking Saudi money to get these fights together, is it in a sense betraying the fans who've made these guys the people that they are? I had messages, and I'm sure you've been aware of it as well, Triz, but I've had messages and texts, stuff on social media from people saying, yeah, Fury against Joshua, it should be happening at Wembley Stadium in front of a British crowd, in front of a British atmosphere. But you kind of know that the way things are panning out at the moment, that it's like the old Las Vegas syndrome back in the 1980s, as Ian's talking about, when fights started to switch over there. And it's and as ever in boxing, it's money that talks, and there's so much slushing around in from the Saudi Arabia end of the deal, that you'd suspect that everything is going to be happening over there.
Well, it's a tough one, John, isn't it? Because it's we either get the fights and they're in Saudi, or we don't get the fights. And, you know, I'm not going to turn this into a big debate about sports washing and all the rest of it, but that's what people want, you know. That's the choice, isn't it? We either get them there without the same sort of atmosphere and crowd vibes and all the rest of it, or we don't get them at all, John. What's your preference?
Well, I'm a big person for atmosphere, if you like. I think the greatest nights are like, for instance, in recent memory, when Josh Warrington fought Carl Frampton, and the Manchester Arena was absolutely rocking that night. And in heavyweight terms, you know, and those big nights of AJ and indeed of Fury. And I think that boxing loses something without that crowd racket. And will people go over in huge numbers over to Saudi to watch these big fights? And if they do, is it going to be the same people who'd be watching over here? I'm not convinced. And people, I think there's a significant minority, if you like, who think, yes, we're getting the fights that we want, but we're being shortchanged because we can't really get there and watch it in the manner that we would wish to watch.
And well, the other thing was, John, they messed up the timings, didn't they, on the night. Tristan and I were exchanging a couple of messages last night. I mean, how difficult can it be in a bill that starts at 4 o'clock in the afternoon to get the main fight in the ring when you've told everybody it's going to happen at around 11:20? I think it was about 12:30, half past midnight, that the main fight got into the ring. And I think a lot of people had lost the will to live by then. I got a few messages from people who said, I'm going to bed. I can't wait up for this.
It was 4 o'clock in the morning over there, wasn't it?
Yeah. So those who've gone over there have to, you know, wait until 3:34 in the morning, which is staggering. You know, and I know we've done that a few times here for Hatton and Calzaghe, you know, two in the morning jobs and all the rest of it. But it is strange, and particularly to get the you know, they said to everyone it was going to be out at 11:20, ring walks at 11:20, didn't they? Like, that was well publicized. And I think I want to say that's when the co-main ring walks were just about for Zhang and Parker. But it's tough, and you know, we go on about this casual audience, and I know I've mentioned it before, but I had the perfect example of it again on Friday. I had throughout the day, my daughter and wife were saying to me, oh, look, we'll watch the fight tonight. You've got that casual audience which you can just tap into that wouldn't normally watch it. And by sort of 10:30, you know, another four fights away or whatever, and they were like, no, sorry, we're going to bed, that's it. And I'm you know, if they're your average people that you're trying, you know, the ones that you're trying to get a flicker of interest from, they just give up. And I've seen it plenty of times. John, what's next for Ngannou? Stay with boxing like Joshua implored, or go back to MMA? I mean, you know, Dillian White's back later this month. I'm sure he, you know, I don't want to say this out loud, but Derek Chisora in Saudi, Chisora's always out there talking about fighting again, no doubt. There's obviously plenty of pickings in the heavyweight division. Or does he go back and rebuild? I guess having made mega bucks for Joshua and Fury, he's not going to go and fight a British level fighter, or, you know, even European. If it's not a huge name, he's not going to be motivated to go and really back and learn his craft, is he? Surely at the age of 37 or 38, whatever he is.
No, I don't believe he is. And as you say, he's made this huge amount of money, rumored to be in the region of 30 million from these two fights. You know, there's not going to be a huge amount of motivation to reinvent yourself and try and really become proficient in a new trade. So he's going to be looking, if he does continue, he's going to be looking for another big payday. And I don't know, I mean, Deontay Wilder, maybe. Ooh, that has a certain amount, you know, it might just have something left for Wilder there, and it might just have something left for Ngannou. But I don't know. I mean, I don't think there's too many. I don't think he's got too many options. You know, you mentioned Dillian White, but Dillian White against Francis Ngannou, is that going to be a headline show? I don't think so. Certainly not at the level that he's been in his last two.
Yeah, it's interesting. And by the way, Ngannou must have made more in two fights than any other fighter has in two fights, in their first two fights in their career, for sure. By millions and millions, no one could possibly have matched up to this.
Yeah, I don't know what Pete Rademacher got paid for fighting Floyd Patterson in his first pro fight.
You'd imagine probably a few hundred bucks, wouldn't you? Imagine a few hundred bucks or a few grand. Yeah, yeah.
Conor McGregor got a fair whack, didn't he?
Well, yes, this is true. This is true. So,
I mean, I was just going to say, it was quite depressing to listen to the interviews after the fight in the ring, and them talking about a rematch between Fury, AJ, and Ngannou. I mean, who wants to see that after what happened? Why would Ngannou want that other than for money? There is no demand for a rematch.
No, but let me ask you this, because rematches are a thing now, and obviously, you know, and we perhaps can go on to the Parker Zhang one in a bit if we get time, but that Parker now has to fight Zhang again, and I don't think after that fight that there's a real appetite for that, because it wasn't the most crowd-pleasing fight.
No.
But Fury Usyk, you know, everyone now wants, and I've seen some stuff written by some American columnists. People do want the Battle of the Brits now, as in now. So, you know, almost instead of Fury Usyk. If Fury stumbles to Usyk, it makes you wonder where AJ goes. Obviously, you know, but Fury has this rematch clause, or they've both got a rematch. It's meant to be a two-fight series. But do we have to have two fights back-to-back regardless? Can't we just slip AJ in there to fight the winner if it's Fury straight away, and then maybe they can rematch, you know, Fury and Usyk can rematch afterwards? But we want to strike while the iron's hot with these fights, right, John?
Well, yeah, you absolutely do. And people have said, let's have that now as the next fight. I was actually speaking to Frank Warren on TalkSport about precisely that point, and said, you know, how about just step aside money in old-fashioned terms? Whoever loses the fight, just make them go away one way or another financially.
I was going to say, not one way or another, surely.
And you know what I'm saying. And he basically laughed. He said that's not going to happen because there are these contracts in place, and that either of the losing fighters will actually push and ensure that that happens, because that will be the financially prudent thing to do. It is a mess. I agree with you. I don't like rematches, but sometimes I think rematch clauses have to be inserted to get deals across the line.
Well, I love rematches when there's a big demand. It's been a great fight and a close fight. Then you want to see the two go at it again, don't you? But most of the time, you've kind of got the feeling you've seen the fight. So do you want to see it again? You're right, Tris. You don't want to see that Parker Zheng fight again, do you? It was pretty boring, to be honest with you.
Yeah, no, I agree. And the thing is as well, you know, Parker's got momentum now. He's just beating Wilder and Zhang in back-to-back fights. Like, let him, he's earned more than to go back in with the same guy he's just beaten, you know, relatively handsomely. I know he climbed off the floor a couple of times, but it's tough. I mean, again, you know, like we go back to the start with the Saudi Arabia thing. If we don't get rematch clauses, maybe the fighters are going to be a bit more reluctant to sign. But also, I do think this, there's obviously so much money sloshing around there that I'm sure that some of these people will waive rights to a rematch if they can get paid off, as you said, really, John. You know, there's enough money to go around. And also, people know now there's a hunger and there's a real appetite for Fury Joshua. And they'll know about that in Saudi Arabia. And they will try, I'm sure, to make that fight happen because of the demand for it now.
What happens if Fury loses, though, to Usyk?
I think
they can still do it.
I do. Yeah. I think there'll still be a demand. And Joshua said this about the Wilder fight. He's still open to the Wilder fight, even though Wilder lost. The thing is now, Joshua's talking about fighting again in June or July. He mentioned that in the press conference, and we know he wants to stay active. Yeah. Well, neither Fury or Usyk are going to be boxing in June or July, having boxed in May or May the 18th when they're scheduled to fight. So who does Joshua fight, and at what kind of level? Because, you know, they aren't going to want him to carry on this sort of rebuilding phase as a top of the bill headline attraction over there. But he's going to want to get... That's the logical one, I'd suggest, yeah.
You know, Wilder's damaged goods, isn't he?
Yeah, but there's talk of Hrgović, because Usyk, if he doesn't face an IBF mandatory challenger, there's a possibility that he's going to get stripped. I mean, this is more rubbish of boxing politics, isn't it? But it's a fact. And it may well be that the IBF ultimately declare their title vacant, nonsense though it might seem, which would give Hrgović, who's the number one mandatory challenger, and possibly AJ most likely as the most marketable man out there, to fight for that vacant title. So when the winner of Hrgović and Joshua finally gets into the ring against either Usyk or Fury, then there would be once again a unified title cachet attached to it.
John, let me ask you this. If I had to ask you to rank the best three heavyweights in the world today, 1 to 3, how would you rank them?
Well, I'd have Usyk one, definitely. I don't think you can radically rearrange your rankings on the basis of Anthony Joshua detonating a huge right hand on a fairly open target on Friday night. So, as things stand, I'd have Fury number two and Joshua number three, with Parker coming in behind that and maybe Hergovic.
Ian, agree with that top three?
No, I think I'm prepared to forgive Fury's performance against Ngannou because I just don't think he was at it on the night. So I think on what he's done before in his career, I still have him as number one. I think I've got Usyk at two and Joshua at three. You? What do you think?
I think based on achievement, I'd have Fury one. Based on achievement and if I was ranking them now, 1 to 3, Fury, Usyk, Joshua. But the way that if they were going in a round robin now, I'd probably go Usyk, Joshua, Fury. That's just how I feel things stand now. But those aren't merited rankings. That's kind of what I think. By the way, I
Where's
say
Mike
that.
Tyson on this list?
Well, we'll get to Tyson in a minute. But something I wanted to say about actually was just about a bit of the detail about the fight. People criticized Ngannou for switching southpaw against Joshua. Well, let's not forget, he switched southpaw for good portions of the fight against Tyson Fury. And Fury looked almost befuddled and a little bit bewitched and a bit shocked when he switched southpaw. So when he switched southpaw against Joshua, it was earlier than I thought he would. But I thought actually it wasn't the worst move in the world, even though obviously we know it opens someone up for a right hand, which is arguably Joshua's best shot, but it didn't surprise me. And people have now picked holes in it. I think they seem to be forgetting that he turned southpaw for long periods of that fight with Fury. But I think this was the thing. Fury hadn't seen any tape of Ngannou fighting before. And Joshua's team would have been able to analyze Ngannou thoroughly from the Fury fight and would have seen the holes and the opportunities to pick the holes with what he was up against. And I think, but I do think, because we know as well, Joshua said he doesn't like fighting southpaws. We know he struggled with them in the past, Usyk, and he's not fought many of them anyway, although obviously he blasted out Wallen. But what I'm getting at is, I think Ngannou would have been better served staying orthodox for the first three or so rounds and getting a footing and then maybe turning southpaw. But he just turned so quickly. And they were ready for it, weren't they? I just think they were waiting for him to do it. And as soon as he did it, right hand straight down the pipe. And it was almost over straight away, wasn't it? I know Ngannou went off, but for all intents and purposes, as a competitive fight, it was pretty much all over once Joshua landed that first bomb. But I was happy for Joshua, by the way. I was really happy for him in the sense that he's dealt with this pressure and he was represented boxing. This is the result we needed last October to put all this stuff back in Pandora's box. And instead, obviously, Fury opened the door to these crossover fights further ajar than Floyd Mayweather had allowed it to be opened against Conor McGregor. I think Mayweather carried McGregor in their fight for long periods of that fight. And then whatever happened with Fury last time and Ngannou, if Mayweather had done what he should have done against Conor McGregor, and if Fury had done what Joshua had done like this, last year, I think that would have probably drawn a line under the crossover stuff.
There were a lot of MMA fans ready to say boxing's into terminal decline, and this is where the proper fighters are, weren't they? They were ready to jump all over it. If Ngannou had beaten Joshua on Friday night, it would have been a huge blow to boxing. Huge.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
I think the best bet of all time in boxing over the last 10, 15 years was Mayweather to beat the
Conor
martial
McGregor.
arts guy, Conor McGregor. Yeah. I mean, it went into 3-1. I think he was only 3-1 to win. McGregor at one point because of all the martial arts fans piling their money on him and believing just what you said, John. There was no way in the world he was going to win under the Queensbury rules against the best fighter on the planet.
I remember there were some young lads who I know who are big MMA fans, and they were obviously saying, you know, what do you think, etc., etc. And they just wouldn't have it. When I said, I'll tell you about that fight, there's more chance of Floyd Mayweather hurting himself getting out of the car and tripping over the curb on his way into the arena than there is Conor McGregor doing any real damage. It was so transparent that Floyd Mayweather carried him. He could have finished that way before he did. And that's the way it should have been with Fury and Ngannou. Of course, it wasn't. And as a result of that, that made this fight against Joshua a possibility. I guess Anthony Joshua won't be too upset about it because he's made another 50 or 60 million on the back of fighting somebody who, as it transpired, turned out to be made for him.
Well, I see Drake put $600,000 on Ngannou to win.
No.
Yeah.
Did he?
Yeah.
What on earth? I suppose for him, that's like you. That's like me or you putting 50 pence on, isn't it? Probably.
Well, yeah, or a tenner each way on the national, isn't it? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. By the way, okay, so you said about Mike Tyson. You know, there are some other bits I wanted to speak to you gents about. Mike Tyson is going to return to the ring in some event in July against Jake Paul on Netflix in Texas, in Arlington Cemetery. Arlington Stadium. What a Friday that is. In Arlington Stadium in Texas.
Don't give the promoters ideas, Tris.
in front of probably 80,000 people and a massive audience. And, you know, Tyson will turn 58 on June the 30th, I think his birthday, 1966. Jake Paul is obviously, you know, a relatively active fighter, light heavy stroke cruiser in his 20s. I don't even really know where to start with it. John, what was your reaction when you saw it, the news?
Well, I wasn't surprised, I don't suppose, because, you know, Tyson's been hanging around the peripheries of the game, and he clearly sees himself as in a position where he can claim what he would rate as some easy money. But I think it's a bit of an obscenity, isn't it? But having said that, I think a lot of people out there will be saying it, and they'll keep on saying it right up to the fight. And then come fight night, when it's free to air on Netflix, which just about everybody seems to have access to, it's going to be massive for Netflix, and it's going to be a huge global audience that's going to watch it. Something else which occurred to me when it was announced was kind of that there's nothing new in sport. You know your boxing history, Tris, Andy, and Jack Johnson, after he'd lost the heavyweight title, he carried on doing exhibitions, and he was still doing exhibitions into his 60s. He died in 1946, was it, at the age of 67. He'd still been doing exhibitions right through into past his 60th birthday. And had there been the sort of social media then that we've got now, then they would have been massive events. So, you know, the freak shows in boxing, I'm afraid to say, it's kind of part and parcel, and it's up to the fans to make their own decision whether they're worth watching or not.
Ian, do you feel strongly about Mike Tyson returning to the ring at the age of 58?
Well, it's a horrific idea, isn't it? Nobody should be boxing at that age. It's dangerous. It isn't like seniors golf, where you can go out and make some money and still be reasonably competitive. Not at all. So he's putting himself in danger. And it's just a terrible, terrible idea. But I think probably John's right. Out of curiosity value, people will tune in and watch it, sadly.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of where we're at, aren't we? There's been massive fights mentioned this week, and fights with massive names. There's been talk of Manny Pacquiao coming back to fight Conor Benn. There's talks of Terence Crawford jumping up two weight classes to fight Chris Eubank Jr. It's all been going on this week. And I suppose it comes to something when Joshua Ngannou is arguably the most legitimate fight out of all of them.
Yeah, good thought. Yeah.
I think you're in danger, though. I mean, there's going to be people out there listening to us saying, oh, it's awful, it's awful. And they're going to be sort of saying, well, yeah, you're a load of old fuddy-duddies. You know, the sport's moved on, and that it's a show, and it's not necessarily a fight to see who's the best. People will say, what's wrong with going and watching Mike Tyson getting back in a boxing ring? I think it's horrific. I agree with Ian. But, you know, in some ways, and you must be aware of this, Triz, as an author and a former boxing news editor, you know, the sport evolves, doesn't it? Things move on, not necessarily for the best, but they do.
And the thing is, which state athletic commission is going to license that fight? Because whoever it is really should be examined by the federal government in the United States. There are some real cowboy operators in the USA, as we know. You've only got to look at some of the referees they put up in states where they don't have too much boxing. And it's pretty much a disgrace, the judging as well in some of those places. So is this Texas that are going to license this?
Yeah, it's Texas, yeah.
How do they justify it?
So it's funny because Texas is a place as well where they banned where they suspended lightweight Keyshawn Davis for 90 days last year because of marijuana use. And now they're going to license Mike Tyson to fight.
Who has a marijuana farm?
He's always
a little bit bleary-eyed when he does these celebrity interviews.
It's crazy, isn't it? But I mean, and also, but we don't know if it's going to be an exhibition or anything. But if I'm going to be boring about this and go back to my book Damage on CTE and boxing, then I do know that there is very little benefit towards people who are 58 years old getting hit in the head, particularly when they've already had it done to them for 25 years earlier in their lives. But gents, I mean, you know, talking about the names that we've mentioned there, and this is where you talk about the evolution of the sport, all of those things that we've mentioned, Ben Pacquiao, Joshua Ngannou, Paul Tyson, and Eubank Crawford, they're all hugely lucrative fights for the people involved. And there is an audience and market for those fights because they are all going to make everyone involved with them a lot of money.
I think there's some sporting justification for Crawford against Eubank. I think that has interest. And if Crawford won it, and I would certainly make Crawford a serious favourite to win that fight if it happens, despite the difference in size, then Crawford would be in prime position to go and fight Canelo.
Right, just last thoughts on Joshua Ngannou, and then we'll wrap it up. But John, Joshua now, is he better than you thought he was now going into this stage of his career?
I think he's pulled it back after a very, very dodgy time in his career when he looked gun-shy, people were questioning his ability to take a punch. You know, there was the defeat against Ruiz. He's been wobbled once or twice in other fights and then outboxed by Usyk. But he's come back and I think he's reinvented himself to a degree as a genuine threat. And I think that Ben Davison takes a lot of credit for that. He's got him looking focused and he's got him into great shape. And however they did it, by analysing tapes or whatever, they had a game plan, and my God, didn't he execute it? That was one of the great right hands that we've seen in heavyweight boxing.
And Ian, I suppose when you look at Joshua reinvigorated and revitalised, that's only good for the heavyweight division.
Yeah, I think it is as well. And I'm like you. I was quite pleased for him, really, because I think he has been through quite a tough time. You can only feel so sorry for a man with 100 million quid in the bank, but... You know, he is a reborn fighter. He's put himself back in the mix. He's made his fans, certainly, and maybe a few other people as well, believe maybe, yeah, he can beat Fury. I think not many people thought maybe a year ago that he could beat Fury. But what's happened since, with Fury's performance against Ngannou and AJ's performance against Ngannou, well, now people are starting to wonder again. So it only puts up the value of that fight even more. I've said it before on here. It is absolutely staggering that that fight hasn't happened before now, bearing in mind the kind of money everybody could make out of it.
Definitely. But yeah, it's all good for the heavyweight division. And like we said earlier, it looks like one way or another, at some point or another, they are all going to fight each other at last. So gents, it's been good to do these deep dives into Joshua and Ngannou. We were going to do it about Fury and Usyk, weren't we? When they were originally slated to face one another. So this one's taken the hit and had our eyes cast over it instead. But gents, it's been great. So that's all from me, Tris Dixon, Ian Dark and John Rawling. You've been listening to Ringside Rewind and we'll be back soon.
Hi, I'm John Rawling, welcoming you to Ringside Rewind, where I'm joined by Tris Dixon and Ian Dark. And we're grateful for sponsorship from Fleet UK, a car and commercial vehicle leasing company based in Hampshire, supporting our programme. Great people who've supplied customers for 20 years or more, including me. Wherever you are, they'll find and supply any car you want and work out financing options to best suit your needs. Fleet UK pride themselves on transparency, trust and fairness in every deal. And you can take it from me, they are brilliant at what they do. Just have a look and check them out at fleetuk.com.